AS, this is AST Radio.
Hey guys, what is going on? Welcome to a new episode of AST Presents. This is your host, Arden Sports Talk here. I hope all is well with you, man. Everything is well with me. It's been a pretty good week since the last time we spoke. My week this week has definitely been off to a good start, man. On Monday, I was at the New York Knicks Media Day. Salute to my friend Greg for coming with me and being my cameraman for that special occasion. And we got a lot of video, a lot of great photos, and we're going to put together a nice little vlog to put on the YouTube channel. And speaking of the YouTube channel, of course, if you want to see new videos from me, from yours truly, please subscribe to the channel at youtube.com/kingarted23, as usual, you know. And there's other things, too, that are going on with me. AST Radio, new episode of that. I'm going to record it tomorrow. And speaking of tomorrow, too, I also have coming up another new interview from AST Presents since I didn't do a couple of last week. I also have one with basketball trainer Damon Elser. That's going to be a good one. I've been following him for a while. We actually been following each other for a while. So this is going to be great just to talk with him. And today's guest, you know, is a really, really good guest, one that I've met only about a week ago, shout out to Bobby Shmurda. And ever since talking to him on their show, I'll tell you more about it once he's on the air. It's definitely been a guy who I've been following, you know, really strong opinion, but it's a unique one, it's a smart one. And whenever we talk on Twitter, it's always a good conversation, so we're just waiting for him. But I understand, man, with me, I've just been working. You know, I've just been working, doing what I have to do to make sure that this content is coming out there to you. You know, so that's why I'm doing two interviews this week. That's why AST Radio is coming this week. Hopefully I can get some new stuff on the YouTube channel. You know, thank you to those that's been checking out the YouTube videos. You know, I feel like I'm starting once again from the bottom when it comes to YouTube, but it's going to be well worth it just because of the fact that, again, I got this content that's coming out that you guys are going to really enjoy. Because, again, with me, even though I talk mostly about basketball and football, there's a lot of things within basketball and football that we can talk about, training, what's going on in the games. So there's definitely stuff that we're going to look forward to. But, yeah, we're just waiting. Oh, never mind. We're no longer waiting. Our guest for today's show, he is waiting. We have him on hold. And like I was telling you guys before, this is somebody who I only just met over a week ago on Twitter because I was interviewed by him and his fellow co-hosts. Big shout out to Joe Caprizzaro and Connor Rogers. I was interviewed on their show, Turn on the Jets podcast, and make sure you check out their website, Turn on the Jets. And this was before the Jets-Colts game, so you guys know I'm a Colts fan, Colts Nation all day. But I had to get him on the show, man, because he has a very unique opinion on sports and music. But most importantly, the guy knows what he's talking about. So going on the air, live from AST Presents, we have D.A. Osorio. How's everything, D.A.?
What's up, my brother? How's it going?
Everything is good, man. I can't complain, man. Thank you for coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me, man. I'm super appreciative of the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to talking with you all things music, sports, and dabbling a little wrestling if we have time. So I'm excited, man. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. We should have enough time, man. We got 40-plus minutes. I was able to set it up that way, so we should definitely be able to dive into everything. But, ladies and gentlemen, before we get to the interview, make sure you follow DA on Twitter at disable_MMI. His Twitter handle is in the description. So let's go ahead and get into this, DA. Where are you from, and how did you, you know, really get into sports? What were your earliest memories around sports?
Well, so I am a New York-born, New York-bred kid. Grew up in the Bronx. First team I rooted for actually was the Atlanta Braves.
Really?
Hold on. Sorry about that. Headphones came out. First team I rooted for was the Atlanta Braves, actually. I've been a Jets fan pretty much since I moved back to New York from Providence, Rhode Island when I was 7. But I like the Braves. I like David Justice, like Greg Maddux. Those are my first memories of sports in general, was just seeing Bobby Cox constantly lose with this armada of pitching that he had. But the Jets always seemed to let me down in the early 90s. And then Parcells came, and Parcells turned it around, and then Belichick stabbed us in the back. I still remember the 1998 AFC title game very, very vividly. I cursed Alex Van Dyke's name multiple times for dropping a wide-open pass on third down that cost us that game. And then now I am a Yankee fan, a Jets fan, and a Mavericks fan. And now that's a little weird because I always get like, wow, really, the Mavericks? But after Mike retired, because, you know, as you know, this growing up in the hood, Mike was like a deity mm-hmm. to all of us, right? Like, Mike was it.
Oh, yeah.
And then when he retired the second time, there was this tall, lanky German kid who had, like, the best shooting form that I've ever seen. And I was like, man, you know what? That's my guy. I'm gonna pull for that guy. And then they got Steve Nash. They brought in Michael Finley and had a bunch of really, really close calls, a string of successful seasons. But then finally we broke through in 2011, beat LeBron in the Heat, won a title. So I got to see them. And I see my guys win a title. So those are my sports memories, man. Those are the things that I remember the most.
Hey, man, I can't blame you for being a Mavericks fan. I actually know quite a few Mavericks fans. And I remember what you talked about in terms of after Mike retired once again. Like, for me, I mean, growing up, you know, like, I mean, I was born in 93, so I remember Mike retiring in 99. And then I remember retiring after his tenure with the Wizards. And I know for me growing up, I was a very big Michael Jordan fan. Contrary to what my dad would say, my dad would be like, oh, you like the Knicks. I was like, that's a lie. That never happened. I was a big Michael Jordan fan, you know, following Mike. And I remember when Mike retired in 03, that's when I became a Cavs fan because my friend, my boy Wilson in elementary school, shout out to Wilson, he actually got me onto LeBron because he was like, oh, you know this dude named LeBron? I was like, who's LeBron? He's like, man, he's like the best player in high school. And so I followed LeBron to the Cavs and then became a bigger Cavs fan. And I've been with them ever since, so I can't blame you, man. But shout out to Michael Jordan, man, for leading us in the right direction after he retired, for real. That was very vital for the community. That was very vital for the community. But yeah, man, just speaking of that, you know, it's growing up, man, and again, you talked about being a Braves fan and following the Jets. Mm-hmm. I really want to touch on your relationship with the Jets in terms of being a fan because like, no, it's not even about the team struggle, but it's like, was there anybody in particular that got you to be a Jets fan, or was that a choice that you made?
It was definitely a choice that I made. I grew up in a Giants-centric household. My brother's a Giants fan. My mother's a Giants fan. Yeah. So I think that was just my way of, like, saying, you know what? Forget the establishment. I'm going to root for that other team that shares a building with y'all. There was no, like, I know, like, for me, I really, really like Boomer Esiason. I was like, here, we finally have a quarterback, right? I know a lot of quote-unquote same old Jet fans follow me on Twitter and talk about, like, the old days where you had, like, all these old quarterbacks, and they talk about Namath and how we haven't had a quarterback since then. And for me, I think Joe Namath is one of the more overrated quarterbacks in NFL history because I think for him
–
yeah, because I think – and again, shout-out to your Colts because Peyton Manning is my favorite player in the world. Like, he is it for me. And so when Parcells wouldn't promise that he would take Peyton number one in 97, I was like, oh, my God, just say yes and thank him. We'll win Super Bowls for the rest of my adult life. Boomer Esiason was really, like, the guy who I was like, you know what? Like, here's a guy who finally embodies what a quarterback should be to me. And then we didn't do anything with it when we had him there. Obviously, we ran into Marino a lot. The Bills were really good during that time. But, no, I've been a Jets fan partially due to the fact that I wanted to rebel against everybody in my household.
Oh, man. You know what's so funny about that, though? I mean, our stories are similar in terms of how we became fans of certain teams. Except for me, it was different because neither my mom or dad's side of the family are, like, really into, I guess, American sports. Like, my mom's side of the family is from the South, but they were never really into sports. My dad's side of the family is from the islands, but they never really were into American sports from what I remember growing up. Like, they were into, like, freaking, you know, like, soccer, cricket, and
track
and field. But even then, they were never really into sports. Whereas for me, I was the sports guy growing up. Basketball, then eventually football. So I remember the same way being a Cavs fan, becoming a Cavs fan because of LeBron. I remember vividly becoming a Colts fan because I remember 2003 seeing Peyton throw six touchdowns versus the Saints. And I was like, I definitely got to be a fan of that guy. I'm like, what?
Right.
So for me, it was like I was basically a free agent. So I always tell my dad and always tell people, I'm like, I'm so happy I didn't have a tradition to carry of following certain teams. And I'm happy I got my teams, man. I really do.
There you go.
But just to continue building off of, once again, your relationship with the Jets, you know, you becoming a Jets fan because everybody in your household is Giants fans and you really was able to identify with a player or two that you really liked and that helped build your relationship even stronger with the team. What led you to say, you know what, now I want to write about the team? You know, forget just watching, forget just rooting, I want to write about the team now. What was that first step that you took
Well, I think the first step to trying to deal with a problem that you have is admitting that you have it, and I absolutely admit that my relationship with the Jets is a problem relationship. It's a problematic relationship. They let me down all the time. I was a big fan of Joe's site, TurnOnTheJets.com. Shout out to the boss. I was a huge fan of him and his stuff and, like, the staff and what they wrote. And so they – I remember thinking, I was like, man, it'd be pretty cool to write for the Jets, but I never thought it'd be a possibility. And then Joe was looking for new writers, and I submitted – a couple of writing samples, along with Connor and Cole, submitted at the same time. We like to think of ourselves as the Turn on the Jets class of 2012. Yeah.
Salute to them.
So they brought me on initially just doing – I did draft pieces initially, like just – and then Joe trusted me enough to start giving me more stuff. So now I handle, like, the running back breakdowns. Oh, that's going to go to John Hart soon because I'm doing, like, other stuff for Joe. If I do, like, the Know Your Opponent pieces, I host a podcast with him. I also do a bunch of stat stuff and theoretically, like, try to make sure that everybody's theories about who's better and who's not is wrong because stats back up most of those claims. That's what really drove me to it was just I love the Jets and I wanted to be able to write about them in a format that would allow constant communication because I think Twitter is the world's biggest barbershop. I feel like that's what it is. It's just open season in terms of just all these conversations that are going on. And I feel fortunate enough to be able to interact with people that maybe I wouldn't normally interact with. Like, I'm grateful to have met you. You know, I'm grateful to have interacted with a bunch of people who just have really, really good opinions on sports that maybe I wouldn't have had the opportunity had I not written for them.
That's the best thing about Twitter. I mean, the best thing to me about Twitter is just, once again, where, honestly, I don't really care for debate. Because to me, I think debates are useless because in the end, nobody really takes anything from the person that they were debating against. It's going to be hard-headed about your opinion. I'm going to be hard-headed about my opinion. So we're literally going to waste our time trying to unsuccessfully get the other guy to, you know, change their mind. Or girls, because there's girls out there that know their stuff. But it's like, I like discussion. So, like, I like talking with you and others. I like having discussions because when you have a discussion, for one, it's more peaceful. And two, you really learn some things about
100%.
Whatever topic that you're talking about. So to me, I think that's really the best part about Twitter, in which you could just talk with a person or talk with people and all this information is flying out. And, of course, we live in a world where I think more than ever connections are important. So it's really about the fact that, okay, not only can I learn from people, we can have this great discussion, which means my time won't be wasted, but I get to connect with people. So you're definitely right about Twitter, man. That's the best part.
Well, and that's the nature of the world that we're living in now is social media is so prevalent in terms of just being able to bring somebody from Seattle, Washington, together with somebody from Chicago, Illinois, right? Or somebody from Indianapolis with somebody from New York. And you 10 years ago, you wouldn't be able to do that. 5 years ago, you wouldn't be able to do that. And I'm actually really, really excited to see where we go from here because I think there's a lot of opportunities for a lot of people of different backgrounds. And I think we've become more accepting of these different backgrounds in this country. But social media is what allows us to do that. And it does it through sports. It does it through music. It does it through movies. Like, everybody says Cisco Lamy on Twitter. One person will see Black Mass and think it's phenomenal. Another person will see Black Mass and think it's the worst movie in the world. And so I think I do agree with you that I think it leads to respectful dialogue and it leads to being able to have different opinions. I'd love to be able to walk away from a conversation with somebody knowing that I know more once the conversation ended than when it began. And so those are the things that I really look forward to day to day.
Yeah, man, that's why for the most part I really don't, in terms of dialogues, I really don't get into dialogues a lot on Twitter because there's not a lot of ones that are really meaningful and that are beneficial. But speaking of Twitter, We're living in a time, man, where it seems like every day, every week, every month, every year, social media is having a bigger impact on the world of sports with everybody involved. It's not just old fans, the fans, because we've covered that. It's great that, you know, us, the fans, and even parts of the media, we get to interact. But now it's at the point where we get to these athletes that we wouldn't have had the chance to meet and talk to. Bearing a lucky opportunity we now could reach with just 140 characters within a minute. You know, what are your thoughts on just social media today, man, and its impact on sport?
Well, I think social media, it just even with just sports, I think it's a double-edged sword, right? Because I think that one of the things that it does is, like you said, it gives us access to athletes that we probably would have had 3, 4, 5 years ago. But one thing I will say, and this is why it veers off, and this is why my opinion varies depending on the day that you ask, but I think that there's a lot of because of the accessibility of these athletes, a lot of people do take that for granted, and you'll see people tell athletes some stuff that, honest to God, they probably wouldn't say it under their face. I'll give you a perfect example.
They wouldn't.
The son of the tight ends coach for the Jets, who made that track about Cromartie and his kids, like, you've seen Cromartie pretty much every day. I'm almost 100% sure. And there's no way you're telling a guy who works with your dad. And that's really what it is, right? Like, think about going to your place of employment and telling your co-worker, hey, I saw you with two of your 15 kids. That may not go over so well. And so that's, at the end of the day, they're doing a job. But, yeah, they're more accessible. Yeah, they interact with us on a different medium than what we're used to. But I do think that that line of respect definitely gets blurred a lot. And that's my only quip for social media. I think it's great for connecting fans to athletes. I think it's great for providing unforeseen access to athletes. But I do think a lot of people do cross that line and think that because you're protected by this firewall that you can say whatever you want. And that's not always the case.
You know what's been my biggest problem lately with social media? It's like, of course, fan interaction can be better. But I'm really starting to get bothered by the way members of the media, noticeable members of the media, are now handling their Twitter. Like mm-hmm. I'll be fair. It's okay. Like, I get it. You know, you definitely get some rude comments along the way during your day. And I understand that's not nice. But to me, I just feel like now with social media, we're seeing more members of the media, especially sports, starting to, in a way, step out of their lane. You know, like, for example, like, I don't have no problem with the dude. Like, from time to time, when I pay attention to his work, I think it's dope. But, like, the one guy that's been bothering me lately on social media is Bomani Jones. Like, I don't really like Bomani Jones as much anymore because it seems like every time I see him across my timeline, he is in some type of useless debate with some fan that just wants to egg him on. Or he talks about these topics that are way out of this range, and it's like, bro, I understand you're free to express your opinion, but at the end of the day, you are looked at as a member of sports media, all right? Like, talk about sports with us. Break it down. We don't got time to see your debates with these random folks that don't matter, or you talking about these topics. If you want to talk about these topics, bro, go on CNN. Go on somewhere else and talk about that. You have a purpose for your job and do that. So to me, it's just seeing members of the media basically step out of their lane and discuss topics that may or may not be for them on a platform in which we really don't want to see them talk about it.
Yeah, that's actually a really, really interesting point because, like, I look at Bomani Jones, one of them, because I remember when the whole Russell Wilson and Ciara story broke, he kind of went on his show and called Russell Wilson a clown for not wanting to have sex with Ciara before they got married, and then Chris Broussard, who's a devout Christian, kind of got in Bomani's face about it on Twitter, no less. And that's an argument that I figured, you know what, you guys work for the same network. You guys should probably hash that out without the whole world having to see it. That's what I think it's done for guys like Bomani Jones, and I do agree. I think it's given them a platform to act a fool. And I think what it is, Bomani Jones, even before the Russell Wilson thing, there were a lot of things that he said that I was just like, oh, you know what, you're entitled to your opinion, but I don't agree with that. I think that's off, you know. And then now as he said more things, I'm like, wow, I was like, you're kind of off. Stephen A. Smith is another one who, Stephen A. Smith, I grew up, you know, in his relationship with Allen Iverson, and that shaped a lot of how I thought the media covered quote-unquote hip-hop athletes, because Allen Iverson was arguably the first one, you know, with the baggy shorts, and him and the Fab Five, but Iverson with the baggy shorts, and the cornrows, and he wanted to be the rapper and all these things. And Stephen A. Smith had this pipeline to Iverson that I thought was phenomenal. But now it's almost like, all right, you've overstayed your welcome because now you want to give me your opinion on things that I personally don't care for your opinions on. Like, for me, I live in New York. Obviously, police brutality is a huge deal out here, right? And I appreciated LeBron and D-Rose and them speaking out and wearing, you know, I can't be sure. I thought that was dope. But Stephen A. Smith is a little out of touch with it because I think, ultimately, like, for you to come out and say all lives matter, so we should, like, not challenge these politicians who are using this rallying cry as something other than what it's meant to be used, I have a problem with that. And Stephen A. Smith is number one in my book when it comes to that. Like, he tends to push his agenda to try to stay relevant. And for me, I don't personally care for it.
Yeah, man, it's just, once again, we have these members of the media now that are just simply stepping out of their lane. And I like that what you said, man. It's true. It's Twitter now is like the place where it's like, oh, you're going to act out of your ways in terms of acting like a fool. So I completely agree with that, man. It is very true. But to switch it up a bit, you know, let's go ahead, because I've been waiting for this. Let's go ahead, man. Let's go ahead and talk about some music, because I know you're a big music fan, especially with hip-hop and rap. I am, too. I've definitely been talking a lot more about music lately. Before we get into the discussion, I might as well say shout-out to Alf, Ryan Alf, man, you know, with his opinions on music and all that, man. From time to time, I got to mute him because he's out of control with it. But
absolutely.
Speaking of music, of course, the Drake Future mixtape came out.
Yep.
To Drizzy and the Future, number one album in the country, even though it's really a tape, number one in the country, over 330,000 sold in the first week. What were your thoughts when you heard about the tape, and then what were you thinking when you listened to it?
Well, so first of all, shout out to Alf, who, despite our differing opinions on the Pimp a Butterfly, which we'll get to eventually, I definitely respect his opinions,
yeah,
and I respect his opinions, and I definitely like that he is able to articulate his opinions in a respectful manner without it having to come off like you're just belittling somebody. So I absolutely appreciate that. In regards to What a Time to Be Alive, it's interesting because, like, when I first heard of the tape, I was like, well, this is interesting because these are two styles for me that don't really mesh well. I think that Drake has a very, very – it's going to be interesting to watch Drake's career unfold as he goes forward, because I think already he's the biggest star in music out of, like, the current guys or whatever. Like, obviously you have your Beyonce's and your Jay's, but I think Drake is on a whole other level musically right now. But it's going to be interesting because this project could have derailed a lot of the momentum that he's had. I also think that this is he's trying to figure out a way to get out of his Cash Money deal and releasing this as a
album. Yeah, a lot of people have been talking about that.
Yeah, so I think this is a way to kind of try to circumvent that, because now he only owes them one more album, which is why the Views from the Six hasn't dropped yet. But so I think, I mean, I was definitely cautiously excited for the tape when I heard it. I definitely felt that it was very much a future project with Drake riding the wave, so to speak. Although my favorite track on it is the 30 for 30 freestyle, because I think Drake absolutely just murders it. Like, just goes, it completely goes off the rip. And I know that that's the verse that he debuted when he was on tour as part of, like, the part of his three pieces that he never dropped to me. But I think it's very, very much a future tape. I think it's very, very interesting to watch, to hear the dichotomy between Future talking about being homeless and not being able to afford food, and Drake talking about that there's a chick who's texting him who is just really annoying or whatever, right? And so that's interesting to me, because we all have different struggles. Like, Drake's struggle of a chick clinging, a stage five clinger, might be very different than my struggle of not being able to buy food. So I get it. I think the tape is a good placeholder. It's not one of the better projects that's come out this year. I still think J-Rock 90059 is the best project I've heard this year. But I do like what Drake was doing in terms of stepping out of his comfort zone. And I think a lot of artists, like 50 Cent a few years ago, one of the main issues was that Get Rich or Die Trying and The Massacre were the same album. There was no difference. He was challenging himself. And a lot of artists fall victim to that, to not being able to step outside the box. So I salute Drake for that. I think it's a nice project. Again, a good placeholder, but I wouldn't rank it as one of my top projects of the year, though.
For me, I mean, you may know by now, may not, but DA or the audience that's listening, you guys know I'm a big fan. You already know I'm OVO, Top Zen. That's my guy.
Straight up.
For me, I've been rocking with Drake. been rocking with Drake since Comeback Season in 2008, since Replacement Girl with Trey Songz in 2007, so that's always been my guy. But for me personally, I was hyped when I heard about the tape. You know, it's so funny. I still have a good friend. I have a friend that I always talk music with. You know, not saying we can't talk about anything else, but, like, it's just, you just have certain people that you always talk about certain things with, because that's just the way it goes. So it's like with him, shout out to Will, by the way, like, we was just talking music and we was talking about the tape. And for me, in terms of what I was expecting, I thought the tape was good enough, because I really didn't go into it with, a certain amount of expectations. I was really going into it open-minded, and just wondering how the two was really
going to
go together.
How they were
going
to pull it off. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, when I heard the tape, I was like, this is a really dope tape. And even a week later, I still feel like the tape is very dope. Like, there's a couple tracks that I really don't like as much. Like, I don't like Jersey. I don't really like
Jersey either.
Digital Dash. I don't really like Digital Dash as much. But, like, to me, honestly, the only thing I really disagree with when people say it is, I don't necessarily feel like it's like, oh, it's a future project with Drake, or Drake trying to ride the wave. To me, I feel like it was more about, especially because I was listening to OVO Sound Radio when Drake was premiering the tape and discussing it. And he was like, I just went down to Atlanta to make songs, and we kind of fell into it. I could easily see it being Future getting Drake to do it, right? They're vibing, and Drake just following Future's lead in terms of, like, okay, this is, like, your type of sound is different, so you do this. Because I always tell people, like, the first half of the tape is definitely a Future-influenced tape. Like, you can see it, like, Future's up front, like, Drake's in the back. But to me, the second half of the tape, I don't care what nobody says, Drake took over that second half because his presence was felt. Whether it was Jumpman, 30 for 30, I'm the Plug, Change Locations, like, those songs to me, I think, are Drake type of songs because his presence was on it. But I really liked the tape. I thought it was dope. I thought it was another way to reaffirm Future's really good run in 2015. I thought it was another way to reaffirm Drake's status as the guy in rap. I know people like to say he's not, and he's constantly criticized. But to me, I always tell people, it's more than just music. Music is the biggest thing, of course. But when you think about relevancy, popularity, you know, you think about influence on the culture, a hold on the culture, just everything that you can think of, I tell people Drake has all of that covered and more. He just has it like that. He just had, he's the guy. That's why I say Drake's a LeBron and Kendrick's like Steph. He's the Steph Curry of the thing, or a healthy Kevin Durant, whatever one that you think is great. J. Cole's James Harden. Because he's good, but people also think he's boring to watch. So that's why I think J. Cole is James Harden.
One-dimensional. Yeah, no, I agree. I think Drake is clearly the guy. And I think it's always funny to me when people are like, oh, but how is it or whatever. Like, and I think it's by any metric that you can measure it by. If you're going by sales, Drake is the guy. If you're going by bars, Drake is the guy. If you're going by melodies, Drake is the guy. If you're going by sold-out shows, Drake is the guy. Like, whatever metric you go by, I think it's him. You're going by number one album, it's him. He just reached 100th placement.
Lil Wayne is, I think it's Lil Wayne, Elvis, and Glee. They're the only three that have more 100-plus Billboard hits than them. Sorry to interrupt, but I had to point that out.
Exactly. No, 100%. Not even Hov. Well, I think Jay is if Drake is LeBron, I think Jay is Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? In terms of the not even Jay touched that pinnacle. You know what I'm saying? And so I think people need to realize this. I think people expect Drake to be this one thing, and this is why it's always interesting to hear the Drake argument, because I think a lot of people say, well, he can't rap like Hov, or oh, he can't sing like Ja, or he doesn't do the numbers like 50 or whatever the case may be, right? But then when you compare it to a guy like Kendrick, who to me, I think Kendrick is a dope rapper, but I also think he's the new Nas, right? Like I think that's his avenue. And for me, I worry because a lot of people say, oh, well, you can't compare him to Nas, he's in the league on his own, but then you compare Drake to all the other guys. And so I think if we have a level playing field when you're having the argument, like, is Drake the guy because he's the guy? So, yeah, he's the guy. Is he the guy compared to other guys? Yeah, he's the guy. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that's the biggest thing, is keeping it level to keep the argument level, because a lot of people won't do that. A lot of people say, no, you know, he sings too much for my liking. Well, he just dropped an album where he predominantly raps. Too much is my jam. Like, I listen to that.
You know what it comes down to? It's just, I think what it comes down to is those same people that may have never liked Drake or had low expectations for Drake, they don't know what to come up with now. Because the man, every time he comes out, he just doesn't fail. And I'm not talking about fail in terms of, like, your personal opinion. I'm talking about the general consensus. Drake has not failed according to the general public. Like, if I asked you, okay, Drake has basically been a mainstream artist for 7 years now. In terms of mainstream, give me an album or any record that you can say the public says is what. You can't name one. And I'm somebody that looks at what the internet says. Like, I look at, I'll be searching up Drake and whatever on Twitter. I'll do it. You can say whatever you want. I'll be looking up what Twitter says. I'll be looking at the YouTube comments. I'll be looking at a lot of things along with people that I follow. The general consensus has said Drake has failed yet. He hasn't. Mm-hmm. And I think, to me, the biggest thing people got to understand, too, is, and this was something I actually saw on Twitter, it happened during my Twitter break, where people was like, oh, who has Drake put on, who has Drake elevated and helped out? I'm like, bro, do you really want to get into this? Like, the amount of people Drake has helped elevate, and I'm not going to say put on, even though he basically put on The Weeknd. He put on Party Next Door. He put on McConan. He basically, in a way, put on Amigos. Yeah, Magic Jordan. It's like
he also elevated.
Yeah.
Not to cut
like
you off, but with Tony Montana, yep.
Elevated a ton of talent. He even helped elevate Kendrick. I was trying to tell Kendrick fans this, right? Because every Kendrick fan swear that they was listening to Kendrick since, what's his album? What is it? Section 80, which is a
Section
lie. But not all of you were. It's, bro, it's like, do you know, like, a good section of fans didn't hear about Kendrick? So basically, you know, the Bury It Alive interlude on Take Care. Yeah, which is right around a great time because a few months later, he came out with Swimming Pools. J. Cole Within the Morning, having guys open up for his tour. People don't realize the Club Paradise store, he had French Montana, A$AP Rocky, Cole, and mad artists open up for him.
Yes, he did.
Mad artists open for him. You know, it's just that the Drake cosign is the biggest thing in rap right now.
Oh,
it really is. So that's why I try to tell people that, to me, when you think about everything without devaluing things, he's that guy right now. Because when you say somebody else is the guy, you're only looking at it at one thing. Because you're not going to tell me, sorry, Alf, that Kendrick is more relevant than Drake. You're not going to tell me that. Sales-wise, you know he's not. I think musically there's a different dynamic between the two. But
for sure,
it's just when you think about those things, you're not going to tell me that another guy is on top of this guy.
No, I agree. And I think the Drake cosign now is what the whole cosign was in the 90s. Like, put DMX on it, put Ja Rule on it, put Benny Siegel on it, put Freeway on it, put Mef Bleek on it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he co-signed Mace, you know what I'm saying, before having to get him out of here, put a mill on. Yeah, he helped the mill drop a number one album, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I think that those are things that, like, you got to kind of consider is that, like, his co-sign, Drake's co-sign has reached that level. Future with Tony Montana, and they almost had a falling out because of it, but still, Drake co-signed him, and that's how people live in the Future. Same thing with Kendrick, and a lot of people don't like to think, but when they were on the A$AP Rocky song, Drake got him on that. Drake had the better verse. So it's like when you compare them sonically, I do agree with you. It's two very, very different sounds. But I think that by any metric, Drake is the guy. I'm sorry, Al. It's just the way that it is. There's no argument that you can frame for me that's going to make me think otherwise. Because I think what it is, it's very similar to, like, Aaron Rodgers to me is the baddest quarterback going right now. He's a bad man. There's no metric that you can tell me that anybody's playing the position better right now. Same thing with Drake.
Yeah, and another thing, too, is let's go ahead and talk about Kendrick. Like for me personally, like, I'm a fan of Kendrick. And, like, for me personally, I really enjoyed the Pimp a Butterfly. I thought it was a dope. Like, so what are your thoughts on Kendrick as an artist?
So, as a rapper, I think he's phenomenal, right? As a rapper, I think he's awesome. As an artist, I struggle to connect with him as an artist the same way that I struggled to connect with Nas early on. I think
okay.
Butterfly sonically is very, very different than Good Kid, Mad City, but I love Good Kid, Mad City. I thought Good Kid, Mad City was a phenomenal album, way more of an improvement than Section 80. And you're right, I do know a lot of people who will sit here and say, man, I've been listening to Kendrick from Section 80, and you can't tell me one song. And that's the thing, I hate when people say that, because it's like, we were friends with Section 80, but now once you do something, you were listening to it, so don't lie to me.
That's true.
Yeah, so I think with To Pimp a Butterfly, he tried to channel his inner Pac a lot, and I think for me, it's always interesting to see West Coast artists think that they need to flock to that, because nobody's been able to really emulate what Tupac did, and for me, I'm an East Coast guy, Biggie was my guy, but I absolutely respect Pac's legacy, and it's always interesting to see guys like The Game, to see guys like YG try to take what Pac did in terms of, like, socially conscious raps mixed in with, like, misogynistic anthem, sort of speak, and try to do that. Kendrick doesn't veer to the misogynistic side, but he does veer, not too often, but he does veer to the socially conscious side. Like, Individualized is a phenomenal song. Mama is an awesome song. King Kunta is an awesome song. All Right to Me is this version. The funny thing is, I've heard that from, like, I have one of my best friends, shout out to Rowley, works at Billboard, and he says that the office is insanely divided about that song, because there's some people who love it, and there's some people who can't stand it because they think he's trying too hard. I'm one of the people that I enjoy the song. I think it's fine. But I do think
If I was overlooking to Pimp a Butterfly, the first single I would have put out, because this was the song that I loved the most that night when I was listening to the whole album, would have been All Right. I was telling people, for the moment I heard it, I said, this is it. This is a hit. I mean, I don't know. Again, once again, shout out to Alf. I know Alf likes to talk about how, you know, Kendrick's not really for the radio playing stuff. But, dude, All Right to me will be a smash hit on radio.
I agree.
Because it covers both sides. And I was actually waiting to tell you this. And I might as well tell you this. Right. You know what it is with Kendrick? Which is why I think with Kendrick, there will always be a divide. I know people say, like, there's a divide with Drake. But to me, I think that divide's closing because there's a lot of people who's recognizing Drake's artistry. Which is Kendrick so far early in his career, and this is what I try to tell people, which is why I feel like in a way Drake is starting to be by himself, is because Drake has basically been mainstream for 7 years now. Since So Far Gone, it wasn't like these other rappers, which, you know, they put out a couple projects, mixtapes, you know, and they were on the low. And then when the debut came out, then they were mainstream. Ever since Drake put out So Far Gone, he has basically been a mainstream artist. So you've seen him at the forefront. The thing with Kendrick early on is because Drake's going on year 7. Kendrick's basically going on year 4. Same thing as Cole, which is he's already had this divide because two different fan bases were used to doing one thing. So Good Kid, Mad City was able to get the mainstream fan base, that pop, that radio fan base to dig with him because we got his vision. Because I'm a mainstream fan. I'll be honest. I'm a mainstream type of fan. But the music was dope. But the thing is, when you suddenly switch it up, only a certain part of your fan base is going to get that, which is why I think even though, and don't get me wrong, The Pimp a Butterfly got incredible views and stuff like that, great reviews. It was definitely one of the best albums of the year. But to me, I think it's just that divide because we really don't know what to expect from Kendrick. There isn't like a certain sound. There isn't this pattern that we have followed. Like, Drake has a pattern. Like, we could go back to day one to seeing his growth. I'm not sure that's really going to be the case with Kendrick, which is why I feel like there's always going to be a divide with him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think with Kendrick, you have, like you said, you have his loyal fan base, which are always going to ride for him no matter what, right? They're always going to be there. But I take a look at the Taylor Swift song, and that was his first, to me, non-organic attempt at getting that pop list. Like, when I heard that he was on it, I was like, huh. I was like, okay. I was like, I know what this is. Because I remember when I first heard Nas's You Owe Me featuring Genuine, I wanted to tell Nas that he owed me because the song was so damn terrible. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, you're trying to get that pop money. You're trying to get that puffy money. You're trying to get that juicy money. You're trying to get that crossover money. And I get it to an extent, but I'm a fan of organic collaborations. And this is tying it back into your first question about what a time to be alive. What a time to be alive feels organic to me. It does feel like they just locked themselves in the studio and just started recording music, and because they liked each other, not because they wanted to cut this check, not because they had any ideas that it would do number one, even though I'm pretty sure they talked about it or whatever, but it feels organic. I'm a fan of organic collaboration. I'm not a fan of forced collaboration. I'm not a fan of forced music, and I think that's what it is. Like, Good Kid, Mad City, for me, felt much more organic than The Pimp a Butterfly. The Pimp a Butterfly had a very, very specific agenda, I felt, and that's what I think turned me off to it. Whereas, like, with Drake, like you said, I mean, I can go back to So Far Gone, listen to Thank Me Later, Take Care, listen to all these songs, and I'm going to get the same message all the way through.
Yeah, man. I think it's about knowing what you're going to get from that artist and just understanding the fact that even if there's change, it's not forced change. Like, it came a long way. So I think with Kendrick, man, at the end of the day is this. You know, I think he's a very talented rapper. He makes good music. I think moving forward is just going to be about, okay, what is his agenda going to be musically?
Exactly.
But you know what it is about Kendrick? You know what it is? I just realized it. I feel like Kendrick, in a way, unlike Drake, I don't really think there's a view on what he expects from himself musically in terms of, like, from here to there, this is what I'm going to be, and even though I'm going to evolve. Like, I just don't feel like there's going to be an evolution with Kendrick. I feel like Kendrick is going to be of the times rapper. Like, what's going on in that time, he's going to, you know, address that. Like, to me, Good Kid, Mad City he was like, all right, this is my story. I'm going to tell you my story. And I feel like with The Pimp a Butterfly, he was like, all right, this is what's going on in this time right now. Race relations, the struggle of the African-American man, you know, again, trying to channel my pop. So this is what I'm going to do. So mm-hmm. I'm now interested because in the third album, it's going to be, okay, so what you going to do with the third album?
Exactly.
Where are you going to go musically? Because in a way, you're putting out plans. Whereas with other artists, particularly Drake, there isn't really a forced plan. It's just I'm just going to go with the flow. I'm just going to grow and it's evolved. So it's definitely going to be interesting. But Alex, don't get mad at us, man. We both like Kendrick, bro. It's just
we do.
Drake's the guy right now, and you know, we're just trying to see what's going on with your boy. Yeah. Before we go, man, we got like less than 5 minutes.
No worries.
Let's talk about some WWE, man, because you're a pro wrestling fan. I'm a pro wrestling fan.
I am.
For me, I've been a fan for over 15 years now. I'm actually going to the show this Saturday at the Garden. That's also going to be the WWE Network special. I'm going to be there. You know, shout out to the $40 ticket to the mid-200 section. When did you become a wrestling fan, and what are your thoughts on the WWE today from what you've seen?
I mean, I've been a wrestling fan, I feel like, longer than I've been a Jets fan, if we're being honest. Uh-huh. I grew up on Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior. I still remember my mom getting the illegal hooked-up cable box so me and my brother could watch WWE pay-per-view events and not have to pay for them. You know what I mean? So, I'm a big wrestling fan. The WWE now, I think they have the potential to have, like, these huge stars. And, like, I look at a guy like Seth Rollins, I look at a guy like Kevin Owens, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose. And it's interesting because with them, they represent, like, this new age of guys that I'm used to seeing. And the WWE for so long pushed these, like, muscle-bound diesel dudes. And so it's good to see a guy like Seth Rollins, who I think is arguably the best pure performer since Shawn Michaels. Like, he's that good. Like, I can't remember a guy who, honestly, I remember watching The Shield thinking, nah, he's not going to be the main eventer. I thought it was either going to be Reigns or Ambrose. And you take a guy like Rollins, who's the most athletic, who's just, I mean, fun to watch and puts on these amazing matches for the better part of now, over a year now. Even with The Shield, like The Shield triple threat at Night of Champions last year against Evolution was phenomenal. Them against Evolution at Extreme Rules was legit. Him in the triple threat with Brock and Reigns at Mania, that good, you know, and he's had a really, really nice run here. I like their product. I think they veer too often and care so much about social media, and this ties into your question about social media and its role in sports. Like, for example, SummerSlam was all over SportsCenter, and I think that's what they wanted.
Oh, yeah.
SummerSlam's huge at the Barclays. But I don't remember a time, and a lot of that could be attributed to Jonathan Coachman, just the fact that WWE does a lot of really, really good stuff, like for Condé's Cure and for cancer and things like that. But they're so concerned with, like, what's trending on Twitter. And Triple H dropped a promo a few months ago where he kind of talked about, like, what people were saying on Twitter. And I remember when the WWE was very much insulated from that. And now it's interesting that as the impact of social media explodes, WWE has kind of tagged along with it and kind of gone along with it. But I love the product. I still watch Monday Night Raw. I don't watch SmackDown. I watch all the pay-per-views on the WWE Network. It's worth the $10 a month to me. It's phenomenal. And Brock versus Show on Saturday should be legit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm really excited to see Brock versus Taker at Hell in a Cell. Rollins versus Cena inside a cage should be good. I like Bray Wyatt. I think Bray Wyatt is legit. I like the Wyatt family. I like that Jericho's able to come back and leave for a couple months and then come back. I think that's good. I think Lana's bad. I mean, I think she's, like, just ridiculously bad. I think Nikki Bella's bad. I like the Divas. I like the Divas situation now more than I liked it in the last few years. So, yeah, no, WWE is in a good spot, man. I just wish they would allow Seth Rollins to be a clean champion. Like, he beats Sting clean. I hope he beats Kane clean. Give him a nice, good, meaningful run before you take the title off of him.
Absolutely, man. I agree with everything you just said. And, again, man, this Saturday show should be incredible. But, DA, thank you once again, Miss, for coming on the show. This was
thank
a really good
me,
interview,
brother.
Man. Mm-hmm. This was, like, over 40-plus minutes, man. We got to prepare for, I don't know whether we're either going to get the raft of Alf or whatever. We'll find out later on. But, yeah, man, please follow DA on Twitter at @disable_MMI. His Twitter handle is in the description below. You have a good day, man. Thank you once again.
Thank you, man. Shout out to you. I appreciate you having me on.
No problem, man. Peace. But other than that, man, that was today's interview from ASC Presents featuring DA Rosaro. Shout out to DA once again, man. Great interview. A lot of fun. Really got into it about sports, social media, music, of course. And remember, man, I got a new interview coming out by this weekend or maybe over the weekend featuring basketball trainer Damian Elser. But other than that, man, stay focused, stay blessed. I'm trying to think of a Drake line to say before I end this show. You know, I think I got it. Kids are losing lives, but I'm scared of losing mine. But if I stay silent, then I'll be crucified. I think that's the Drake line I only have for today. I wish I had a better one. But other than that, man, that's ASU Presents. Peace.